And I think when we talk about transitioning, I think it's really important to really, you know, take a step back from your training and say, you know, I wasn't an MP, and I'm working with some guys here in going into entrepreneurship. I wasn't an MP. What you were was a leader. You were a leader in these categories. You had skill in these categories. You have knowledge, and they're transferable. But no one shares that with you. And I think it's really important to, one, you know, understand from a bigger picture of what your skills actually are. And then I also think it's really important to start finding, I don't want to say new friends, but new friends in a similar situation, because I think that's critical as well, whether that's through Facebook, whether it's on the phone, or, you know, hanging out somewhere. Let's say the gym and not the bar, kind of a thing.
Hello, and welcome to the new Mission Career Transition Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Caprellian. We interview service members that transition to new careers, DoD representatives, and civilian HR professionals to provide you with lessons learned you won't get in a transition class and to help you transition with confidence. On this episode, we have Steve Rote, prior Marine who went the entrepreneurial route and did so successfully. Today, he's a franchise consultant. He works with FCC Mid-Atlantic and Steve Rote Enterprises. And we're going to talk about the world of franchise. I mean, we talked about business ownership and entrepreneurship, but this is going to go into a deep dive on what it means to become a franchise owner and the benefits of being a franchise owner. So if you've got that entrepreneurial bug bite that you think that's what you want to do when you get out, hey, this episode is for you. Plus, Steve is a riot, and he's got some great stories and lessons learned on his journey through entrepreneurship. So stay tuned. Steve Rote, welcome to the podcast.
Chris, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Hey, well, thank you for coming on. One of the topics we're going to talk about, actually, we're going to do just a whole deep dive into what it means to be a franchise owner or buying into a franchise. You know, I'm not sure if I've got my terminology right, but I know we have some content that we've talked about starting a business from scratch. And then there's a second option. And quite frankly, I don't know much about the second option. So this is going to be a great education for our listeners and even myself. And, yeah, so this is going to be great. But to start off, I ask every guest, you know, we want the audience to know who you are and where you came from. So I'm going to throw some softballs at you, Steve, and ask you where you grew up and how you joined the military.
I don't know, but you're not going to ask me anything to make me cry now, are you?
I cannot promise your feelings won't get hurt.
Nah, that's all good. I grew up outside of Philadelphia, a little town called Bridgeport, outside of Philly. The landmark there now is the King of Prussia Mall. So that was a long time ago, 59, so we're talking almost 60 years ago there. And for the last 30-plus years, I've been here in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, out here in God's country. It's a nice little change from the city life, but it's only 40 minutes away, so it's a great mix for me.
Okay. So,
yeah, it's been great.
You've got some time, though, in the Marine Corps. You're a fellow leatherneck.
I am.
Yeah, how did that happen?
Well, can I say ego? I guess I did. Growing up, the town that I grew up in was a pretty tough town. So if you look on a map, Bridgeport's 1 square mile. And there used to be a giant steel mill right outside the town, and everybody worked there. So you were either went to the steel mill, you were in construction, or some other bad things happened to you in that town. Mm. It was a very, very blue-collar town. I played football at a place called Upper Marion. We were state champs and all that kind of good stuff. We had a great, great team. And I always said to myself, I'm going to be part of the best of anything. And in my mind, there's nothing more challenging than the Marine Corps. So right after I graduated high school, I started college over at Millersville. And they had a great program in the Marine Corps at that time. I don't know if it still exists, but the program was you go away for boot camp for the summer. Then you get attached to a reserve unit during the school year. And then in May, you get attached to another full-time unit for the summer months. And then you do that for 6 years and with the intention of being an officer. Hmm. So it was an awesome program. And, you know, in the Marine Corps, people come and go. They don't know what happened to you, where you are. Just you show up one day and you leave another. So it was a great experience. You know, went through boot camp, went through the Paris Island, had a great experience out in Fort Leonard Wood for heavy equipment operator. Then after I went through all that, they saw me. I was a center at Millersville playing football there. So I was a fairly larger guy. And somebody said, "Hey, Steve, you know what an M60 is?" And I went, "Nope."
I saw that coming. I knew it was coming. If it wasn't coming, I was going to say, "Yeah, you carry the machine gun."
You know what? I always laugh because I was a little bit larger, you know, in our platoon. I got the M60, and the smallest guy in the platoon got to carry the ammo. And that was backwards. Quite frankly, that was heavier than the weapon.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, it was great. So, you know, I got in, and my intentions always were to make a career of it. I fell in love my last year of school and you know, my last tour of duty, if you will, with the Marine Corps. So I got out and got married and had kids and went to entrepreneur, you know, route. And that was in and out of the Corps. It was a great time in my life. And like I said, when we talked, really, I mean, I don't mind talking about it, and I'm very proud of the Corps and being associated with it. But there are guys out there that really earned a title. I mean, I guess we all earned it, but I mean, they live in danger every day. So I always take my hat off to those guys.
You earned the title Marine, and so, you know, you're one of us. I'm sure that it was formative as you went down your journey of entrepreneurship. So maybe you could tell the listeners, what was that like? I mean, you got out of the Marine Corps, and I get the sense that you have the heart of an entrepreneur. You always have. How did you start?
Well, I'm unmanageable. I'm not a good employee. No, I mean, actually, you know, you tell a Marine, yeah, right. You got to tell him what to do, and that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
But
I know what you mean. I know what you mean. Others, they know what you mean. I get it.
But really, what was really kind of cool is I got out of the Corps, and I met a gentleman. I met a gentleman that was a West Point grad, Vietnam vet, and he took a liking to me and brought me into a large corporation. I'll remain nameless here for a second. Did a great job, took me in and kind of taught me the business world. And ironically, I'll tell you, I was responsible for distributors is what had happened. I was responsible for taking care of distribution of this product line that they offered. Hmm. And I came up with this brain cramp, I call it, of blanket orders. So what happened was I go to my distributors and I'd say, last year you bought 1,000 of these products. If you order 1,100 for next year, I'll keep the price the same. Well, it went so well, and you're going to fall out of your chair when you hear this. It went so well that I had sold by January, I had sold that year's plan plus the next year's plan by January. And then an infinite wisdom of upper management, they brought me in and said, you know, you did so well for the next 2 years. I said, yeah, I know. And they went, well, if we take you out of our payroll, the sales still come in. And I went, I'm thinking I'm going to get transferred. I'm going to get promoted. I'm going to get a kiss on the cheek or something. And they went, we got to let you go.
Oh, my gosh.
It's a true story. Now, they took care of me with severance pay because it came out of a different budget and et cetera, et cetera. But, and I got taken care of. So that happened and I went, wait a second, I just did well. And at that point in time, I was married and I had one child. So I went to work for a European company, and very quickly I rose to the ranks. I became vice president of sales in the Mid-Atlantic area. It was going fantastic. It was absolutely going fantastic. I was driving, flying all over the place, and things were going great. I had 10 guys that worked for me, and they flew me to Switzerland. I'll never forget. They flew me to Switzerland, and I met with the president of the company, who was a worldwide company, and he says, Steve, you're doing so great. We want to make you president of U.S. operations. And I went, thank you, but I got to move to California. He said, yes. I said, look, I'm an East Coast guy. I'll stick out like a sore thumb in Southern California. I said, so if you don't mind, let me stay here and I'll work for whoever. And he went, great. You do your thing. God bless you. And we had a drink. The schnapps, actually, pear schnapps was his thing. Huh. We had a drink. It was great. I get to, about 3-4 weeks later, they call me out to California. And the new president of the company of U.S. operations, and I was only 34 at the time, 34 years old. And a wife, two kids now, and a big dog and a giant mortgage. And he takes me out there and says, look, you're too good of friends with the CEO. I said, well, yeah.
Yeah.
He went, I can't have somebody like that on my team. You got to go.
And if you weren't manageable before, you sure as hell aren't manageable now.
Not even close. So now again, that worked out well because I had a contract and they paid me my contract and I got a little bit of money. And that's really when I went back and said, look, I got to do my own thing. I got to work for myself. I can't be subject to other people's whims. But, and really none of it was more than out of all this was I look back and everybody was, I don't want to say selfish is not the right word, but they were very centralized focused. So to me, I'm going to say I went kicking and screaming into entrepreneurship, and it's not been easy, but it's been a wonderful ride. Wonderful.
Wow.
There you go. That's your story for today.
Yeah. Oh, no. You don't get off that easy. We got to get into this. All right. So, man, I guess when one thinks, or even when I think of what working in corporate sales is like, there's cutthroat, but I guess that's kind of the reality of cutthroat. So after you had that sting and realized that you need to work for yourself, what did you start doing?
The first thing I did was because I was in sales, and the product that I had with the European company was industrial products, valves, instrumentation, things of that nature. I started my own manufacturer's rep business. And it was me, and I had a Great Dane at the time, Dante. So it was me and Dante in a spare bedroom. started it. And I took a shot. And like I said, I was fortunate that because of the severance, my contract with the Swiss company, I was able to afford a little bit of luxury of ramp up time. So I started doing that pretty well. And then I got an idea of having a service company install the product that I was selling. And I went, that's a great idea. And I tried to find a company to buy. And I came across a franchise called Paul Davis Restoration. It was a franchise. And I looked at it and I went, wow, I like this thing. But it had no affiliation with industrial products. Had zero. Zero affiliation. And when I got down to it, I made a choice to jump from truly independent ownership to owning a franchise. And it was that I started with myself, a truck, a lady in the office, and that was it. That's how things started back in May of 2000, to be exact. Yeah.
Wow.
Mother's Day weekend was actually. Yeah.
Mother's Day weekend.
Was it?
And then how did that scale? I mean, because I know you scaled it.
Oh my goodness, yeah. So it was, like I said, it was me in a truck, and I owned two counties, is how they sold it. I owned two counties in Lancaster.
Okay.
I grew the business. I grew the business. I started adding people and working the deal, working the program that Paul Davis had. And you know, as it was going, there was a neighbor franchise who the guy was just, he was a wild man, to say the least. He was doing everything against the program, against the Paul Davis. So I wound up just going with him and said, look, I'm going to buy you out. Because in a franchise, the good news is there's hundreds of franchises with your name. You're all the same name. It's a wonderful thing. The bad news is you get a jerk in the mix. Well, now you're all jerks because you're all the same name. So that's the bad news. And franchises work really hard to fix that. But anyway, I got to meet this guy and I sat down and said, let me buy you out. And I did. I acquired his territory. And then, you know, I worked it and it started to grow. And I developed a reputation of working in the insurance industry. And then another gentleman came in and said, Steve, you're doing so well. I could do that. I said, great. He went, that's partner. I said, I'll do you one better. I'll buy the adjacent territory. You run it. When it gets to a certain level, you buy it from me at this price. No problem. And I thought it was a great deal. And he jumped in. And after a little while,
he went,
you guys are crazy. You're crazy. And he got out. So I acquired that territory. And then over time, as people wanted to retire or they weren't doing as well as they wanted to, and I was friends with all the adjacent franchises, I wound up acquiring them, et cetera. And over a 15-year period, I wound up having 8 franchises. We had 167 employees, and I became the what they call large loss. So most Paul Davis has dealt with homeowners have flooded basements, et cetera, little fires in their house. I dealt with all the schools, the hospitals, the retirement communities, the really big stuff because I enjoyed it. And I invested in training and assets for it. And that was 2016 when I sold it all, I sold it all back. Yeah.
Wow.
And it was a heck of a journey.
Yeah, no doubt. And in that journey, were there hard lessons learned, like a couple that just come to mind that are still applicable today?
Yeah. Oh, there's a ton. There's really a ton. I mean, with a franchise, there's a couple of things. And I think the most important when we're talking about, it could be franchising, it could be any business scenario. You know, people go into business to make money. And you want to provide money, you want to provide for your family, whatever your vision is. But one of the things that is huge is people that you partner with or you rely on, whether it's a vendor, whether it's a subcontractor, whatever the case may be, people that you really depend on. In my case, it was the franchisor. You know, they were setting the strategy and I was implementing the operations. You had to share core values. Hmm. And you know, if you don't like the person you're in bed with, that's a real problem. And can I say in bed with on a podcast?
Yeah, you can. you could say whatever you want, Steve.
Okay. Yeah. All right. But I would say the few of the life lessons is, number one, and I will get into what I do now, but when I talk with clients getting into franchising and getting into business, number one thing that I focus on is, do you understand what your core values are? You know, you should be able to look in the mirror and say, this is what's important to me, whether it's family, whether it's religion, it doesn't matter, but whatever's important to you is important. And then when you talk to people that you're going to count on, do they get close? Because when I left, one of the things, I'm heading down a rabbit trail here, I'll pull me back, but When I left Paul Davis, I had an agreement with him that it was a two year what they call earnout. You sell for a certain value and they leave some stuff. You got to make sure your performance is there. And then I became the fix-it guy for them. I helped them buy other franchises because they were buying franchises. This is what they were doing at the time, and I was the first one. But they're and then I also helped other franchises when they were in trouble to see what the problems were. And almost 100% of the time, when people were in trouble, there were two things that happened. Number one, they left the program. Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I did 100% of the program, because I may see train tracks and I'll run on them, but that doesn't mean I'm staying with them. You know, I'll veer a little bit, yeah. But I head in the same direction. These people got off the reservation there and they went kind of far. And the other thing that I discovered almost 100% of the time was what they felt as a core value with them, you know, honesty, integrity, whatever that may be, did not align with the franchisor. So when there was a problem, when there's a conflict, they couldn't meet at the table and say, let's resolve it. I was very fortunate because I didn't know back in 2000 what values meant or were. But we aligned very well. So when I had a problem, and every business has adversity, I was able to call up the president and say, I got a problem. I'm not saying it's your fault. I'm saying, how do we get to the end of this thing? And 100% of the time, they worked with me, 100%.
It almost sounds like a great recipe for a marriage, too. I mean, it's almost the same darn thing, right?
Like, absolutely.
Yeah, you say get in bed with, quite frankly. I mean, but it's true, right? Yeah. I just as a guy that, I mean, I've got a divorce under my belt, you know, and I've made mistakes and I've learned, but it sounds like taking the same approach. I mean, you got to have a really good functioning relationship based on core values, whether it's with a partner or the franchise itself, correct?
It's all the same.
Yeah,
it's all the same. You know, a physical partner that you live with, or a business relationship partner. I tell you the truth, I think it's easier to get out of a physical partnership than it is to get out of a business relationship.
I could imagine that. I could imagine that.
Well, you know, I got to tell you, so you mentioned divorce and recently I went through, I'm recently single for you know, no one did anything stupid. It was just one of those things that it ran its course. But in the midst of all that, and this is going to attest to matching values. I was with a company called Redbox Plus. Redbox Plus is a dumpster and porta potty franchise. Great concept. They built a cage on the front of dumpsters and they put two porta potties on it. So when a contractor needs a dumpster, he gets two porta potties at the same time. It's an unbelievable concept. And I own four of those. Well, when I went through my divorce, that was part of the assets of the company. It had to go. With Redbox Plus, I had a 10-year contract with them. They could have said no. They could have really said no. But I called the president of the company and I flew out to Wisconsin and I said, look, I'm going through this. This is terrible. I didn't plan on it. You know, can you help me? And because I believe we supported each other for the time that I had the franchise and I'm gonna say, you know, a good team player, they respected me. And I respected them, and we had a great conversation, and they helped me transition out. They helped me sell what I needed to sell, and it worked out well for everybody. Right. And I say that 100% was because our values aligned, and when the adversity came up, people didn't mind helping each other. If you're a jerk along the way, then when you need help, not too many people are going to help you.
Yeah.
So I think those are testaments. To real life testaments, you know, to my statement of values being probably by far one of the most lessons that I've learned.
And probably coming in second is good relationships, which kind of are predicated on having common values.
Yeah. 100%. I mean, if you look in a mirror every day and you're a jerk, and you know you're a jerk, well, everybody else knows it too. Don't kid yourself. Everybody knows it. Yeah.
You're not fooling anybody. Okay.
No, they may tolerate you, but that's about it. You know, you're a good person. You work hard. You have good ethics. And I'm going back now to Marine Corps stuff. integrity, you know, doing the right thing, working hard, you know, what are you doing when no one's watching, kind of a thing. And it's not bad.
JJ, did tie buckle actually mean something, particularly if you're going to be an entrepreneur?
Absolutely. The greatest lessons you ever learn that you learned when you were 3 years old. Well, yeah. As an adult, the greatest lessons that you'll learn really for me came out of boot camp.
Or when I had the maturity of a 3 year old, which might have been OCS, who knows? No, it's great. That's awesome. And I think it's it's reassuring. I mean, because the whole transition process is a bit, well, I mean, I'm going through it. It can be nerve wracking, and just reminding yourself, like, the things that you've learned and the experiences that you had, don't forget them, because they do pay off in the long run. So that's a great lesson learned.
Can we talk about the transition for a second?
Absolutely. Tell us. I want to hear it more about transition.
Well, the transition, and I happen to have a conversation with a brigadier general who was under Secretary of Defense for a while. Super nice guy. And he was telling me all the great things that the VA does. And I don't disagree. The VA does a great job. The part that I was sharing with him is, when I left a long time ago, long, long time ago, there was some PFC behind a table. All he wanted to do is get my trash and get out. that was it. If he happened to be great, then I learned more about what the transition different programs were. But I think a lesson for specifically the younger people transitioning is, you know, when you're in the military, specifically the Marine Corps, you know, you're part of the most elite group you'll ever find in the world. I mean, truly in the world. You got access to this unbelievable equipment. You got access to continuous training. And then the good news is, when you're done that training, you're hanging out with all people your same age. You all have girlfriends or wives about the same age. You all have kids about the same age. You go to the bar, you complain about the same thing because you're all making the same amount of money.
Yeah.
You know, but believe it or not, that is an unbelievable support structure that nobody recognizes. Mm. Going to a local bar, tap room, whatever you want to call it, and hanging out with a group of people, that's not the best environment, but you know what? It's a place to vent. It's really great. You leave the military, whatever branch of service, and now you go applying for a job, and all of a sudden you're not qualified. All of a sudden, all the training doesn't add up, and you go back, and you got to tell your wife you can't get a job, and she doesn't really care. She just wants to make sure she can pay the rent and put food on the table. That's demoralizing. That's a big deal, and I think when we talk about transitioning. I think it's really important to really, you know, take a step back from your training and say, you know, I wasn't an MP, and I'm working with some guys here in going into entrepreneurship. I wasn't an MP. What you were was a leader. You were a leader in these categories. You have skill in these categories. You have knowledge, and they're transferable. But no one shares that with you. And I think it's really important to, one, you know, understand from a bigger picture of what your skills actually are. And then I also think it's really important to start finding, I don't want to say new friends, but new friends in a similar situation. Because I think that's critical as well, whether that's through Facebook, whether it's on the phone, or, you know, hanging out somewhere. Let's say the gym and not the bar, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
I think it's huge. I think that's huge. And that's where we came up with a couple of programs. And, you know, I think you and I were talking before the podcast here was, you know, I'm a chairman of the Veterans Council through our company, where we have a group of guys just, you know, helping people that are transitioning from the military into entrepreneurship or business. Maybe they can't be an entrepreneur, but maybe we can point them in the right direction for business. That's a big deal. That's a really big deal.
Oh, that's great. I didn't know your company actually provided outreach specifically to veterans. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, we have a couple of councils, and like I said, because I'm affiliated, you know, with the military, I really jumped on the Veterans Council. But there's a few that really, you know, one I'm going to an organiz- uh, a show this weekend that's just specifically for firemen. A friend of mine's head of that group, the first responders group. So yeah, I mean every group has their own needs, has their own uniqueness. But there's a lot of overlap too. So
yeah, no doubt. Well, we're putting the cart a little bit before the horse. This is actually a really good segue. So let's transition a little bit from there. What do you do now? Like, let's talk a little bit about your business and what you do.
True. So after I sold everything, I had some non-competes, et cetera. I got into a company called, it's called Franchise Consulting Company, FCC. And really what our organization is there's 174 of us. I became a partner in a company. And we have two major functions, if you will, two major missions. One is I work with companies that are trying to grow, and I help them grow, or at least look at growing, by becoming a franchise. So that's number one. So I'll sit down with business owners and find out what their goals are, what their plan is, resources allocated, et cetera. And then most of my day is spent with clients trying to figure out that they're interested in becoming their own boss, but don't have any clue of what franchising is all about. Hmm. I mean, most people think of franchises, they go, oh, you know, McDonald's, Chick-fil-A, you know, Subway. There's 4,000 franchises across the United States.
Wow.
There's in every industry known to man. And because my world was the restoration world, that's what I know. I know home services the best. So I kind of go, there's a million home service. There's a franchise for picking up dog waste, quite frankly. I mean, there's a franchise for everything.
Wow.
And by the way, that one is that franchise is like an ATM, by the way. Just spits out cash all day long. But there's franchise. So what I do now is I'll spend time with people. I'll find out what their goals are. I have a questionnaire for them that we go through and ask a questionnaire. You know, we talk a little bit about money, and I know specifically when you're talking about people coming out of the service immediately, they don't have a lot of cash. I get it. There are ways to get some. We got to work through it. But there's all kinds of things. But I help people try and understand what they want to do, not from a business standpoint, but what's their goal? If they got $10,000, why not just put it in the bank and get interest? What are you trying to get out of this thing? What's your lifestyle vision? And then I go and I go shopping, and I try and find them a franchise that works. And most of the time I'll get close, and then they tell me, I like this, I don't like that, and like it, and I learn. And then I go shopping again, and I go shopping again, and I go shopping again until they tell me to stop or they buy something. But it's a journey, and that's, I think, the biggest lesson I have to teach people is people want to change their lives, and whether they're just transitioning out of the military or they had a job and they're tired of working for someone else, it's not something you flip the switch and you do it tomorrow. I could do that for you. I can get you a franchise instantly. The problem is it may not line up with what you need. And so I spend a lot of time on, what do you need? What are you trying to achieve? And work with people on that.
Yeah, I want to get into that. I do want to ask you a basic question before we do, and it's actually related, is let's say somebody wants to be an entrepreneur and they kind of go with what they know, i.e., you know, they frequent a location or there's a business that they always like paying for, purchasing things from or whatnot. And somebody's struggling with the idea of, well, what do I do? Do I start my own business because I've got this idea? Or do I go the franchise route? You know, have you serviced clients that kind of have that divide? And what are the relative differences between being a business owner and a franchise owner?
Oh, good question. And I didn't say this before, but when I had for the 16 years that I had Paul Davis franchises and I was growing that thing, I actually had a couple of independent companies along the way that supported Paul Davis, flooring and a roofing company. They were not franchised at all. So I have a little bit of perspective on both ends of the spectrum here. Mm. First of all, everybody should realize, it's no secret, that every franchise started with someone's good idea and went off on their own and did it. That's every franchise started out as an independent business, and that's a fact. So really, the value of a franchise, and the value specifically for me, like I indicated, if you give me a track to run on, I'm going to stay pretty close to the track and run. So, you know, for example, you get in with a Paul Davis or a Redbox Plus or one of the 4,000 other franchises. When I got Redbox Plus, it's a dumpster franchise that also is, you need CDL drivers because you were driving roll-off dumpsters. They gave me a list of things I needed to do before I could open my doors. That was Department of the DEP, Environmental Protection. I had waste haulers, the state of Pennsylvania, Department of Transportation. There were all these things that I had to do, get licenses, permits, etc., to make happen. They gave me contracts to get signed by my clients who were getting these dumpsters. So we didn't, you had to do so many things to damage the drive, or not damage the driveway, or they had to do so many things to protect it. So all of these things just to get started was provided by the franchisor. You know, marketing. As soon as I paid for it, they start marketing my business for me with professional graphics and I search engine optimization. I call it all digital marketing, everything online, local mailers, billboards, human resource things. What does it take to hire an employee? They had it all listed out. All these different categories from legal, accounting, human resources, marketing, and what kind of location you needed and where it needed to be, you know, for demographics, all that was provided by the franchisor. If you wake up one day, if I woke up one day and said, you know what, I'm going to start a dumpster company and provide porta potties, I got to learn how to do all that myself. I got to go to the attorney. I got to go to marketing and find the right marketing company. And finding a good partner is not easy. I'm not saying it can't be done, but the learning curve and the success curve get flattened out dramatically when you're doing it yourself. And the more you're learning, the less money you're earning. So it's a long process. And if you got the resources to do that, God bless you. God bless you. To me, it was more important to get revenue coming through the door and having multiple locations and a brand out there that made sense. And at the end of all of it, on the other end of the spectrum, I'm just talking about the startup at this point. But along the way, for Paul Davis, for example, we had what we call roundtables. So franchises of similar size and similar scale would get together 3 times a year and we talk about anything we wanted. Because I could share it. They're not competitors. They're friends. If I own Steve Rote Restoration, who am I going to talk to? You know, they're all my competitors in town are going to lie to me. I'm not going to share details with them. So the franchisor helps you stay educated, stay engaged along the way. And on the backside, when it was time to sell, when I sold Paul Davis or when I sold my Redbox Plus, the franchise had a much greater value than Steve Rote Restoration or Steve Rote Dumpster, because there's a brand there, and the multiplier is much more. When if it was Steve Rote Dumpster and Steve left the door, walked out the front door, there goes the brand. So franchising is it gets you where you want to go quicker. And it should, I hate using the word should, I don't like it, but getting lined up with the right franchise should provide ongoing engagement, opportunity to learn and be a master of that industry and pay off at the end. Along the way, you're going to pay royalties. That's what it costs you. And then whatever, everybody's royalty is different, but you're going to pay royalties along the way. So there's a little bit of a trick.
Steve, I know you do this for a living, but you make it sound really good. I know you do. But I mean, it's just like, It's almost like jacking into a matrix and all of a sudden downloading 20 to 50 years worth of business experience, because instead of, you pay royalties, right? But you paid the royalties so that you didn't pay back taxes on an IRS payroll audit. You didn't pay the fines because you couldn't figure out that there were a whole bunch of OSHA standards you weren't compliant with. You didn't lose revenue on sales because you didn't understand the ABC or the food health and sanitation laws for whatever service you were providing. And then on top of that, you get the year's worth of brand recognition for whatever product or service you're providing to a customer. It's like jump-starting a business from 0 to 60 because you've got the partnership and the network to be able to make that a reality.
Man, right on the money. Right on the money. Yeah, you got it.
Wow, that's great. So somebody that's interested in going to a franchise, and maybe they, and I understand you counsel them by figuring out what are their goals, what is it they want, trying to figure out their core needs and then match them with maybe options that are right for them. It, don't get target fixation on the Chick-fil-A. We know I love my number two, but you know that's probably not the right thing for me. When you service clients, what are different personal requirements, or explain the spectrum of individuals that you've counseled based on what their needs were? Can you give some examples?
Sure, and the spectrum is broad. Let me start out by saying that it's like there's a few guys that I have, and I use guys generically, so anybody out there don't get offended. There are a few guys out there that they have money and they're trying to bury it to pay tax. So they're not paying taxes or building assets from it. That's a few. And there's a few people that they're buying companies that have a lot of assets, like the dumpster franchise. I mean, it's all assets. It's dumpsters and trucks. But that's on a very, very broad end of the spectrum. Most people I deal with are people that are, I'm going to call it middle-class Americans. They have some equity in their home. They made a couple of dollars in their 401k account. I'm not talking a million. I'm just talking a couple of dollars in their 401k account. And they're looking and saying, I'm 35, I'm 40, I'm up to about 50 years old here. I got a little bit of runway left to do something and leave it for my kids or to give me some more freedom. That's the vast majority of people I work with. They're in that range of saying, they're looking at the next phase. They got kids and they're trying to figure out what's next. You know, what are they dealing with? They're looking at money first. They're looking at, I got to earn. I was on the phone with a gentleman yesterday who said, he goes, I don't know if I'm right for franchising or not. I said, okay, let's talk. And we start talking, and he went, and his wife jumped in and she goes, we can't live more than 4 months with him not having an income. I said, okay, if you don't mind telling me, what's the income? She says, we need something in the neighborhood of $25,000 a month to live, period. I went, starting a franchise business may not be for you right now. Yeah. No business is going to come in and drop that kind of money that quickly. I shouldn't say none. There's a few, but you're going to put a whole lot of money into it.
Yeah.
So we spent the rest of the time talking about, could he stay with his current job or change jobs and take a little bit less of income and get some income out of an upcoming franchise and give it an opportunity to grow? Because you put that kind of burden on any business, you're going to kill it. And it's just not going to make it. You're going to kill the business and hurt yourself personally.
Do you say that because you're going to be making decisions solely based on revenue instead of something that is a more important?
Yes. If you're looking at just that revenue, I think it's a mistake. Personal opinion is a mistake. I think that unless you have a boatload of money sitting somewhere that you just want to invest and looking at ROI, then that's one strategy. That's not wrong. That's one strategy. Most people I deal with are not in that world. They're still in a growing phase. They're still trying to set themselves up for retirement, or they're trying to have something of a legacy to give to their kids. They're trying to do something in that fashion. So earning, paying for healthcare, and starting a business is all similar priority. So we need to now talk about that process along the way. And then once we figure out those types of goals, and that goes back to my, what are your goals and what are your values? What are the goals here? You want to turn something over to your children? Beautiful. You got to generate some income? Beautiful. Now, let's back into a franchise. Because once we understand what your vision is, once we understand your needs, some things just fade away. I'll give you an example. I often get the question, I want to be in the dispensary business. I want to dispense cannabis because I heard it's very profitable. You're 100% right. It's extremely profitable business. But on a federal level, it's still illegal. No matter what the states say, it's still illegal. Therefore, no institution that lends money that's FDIC insured can lend money to a cannabis place. So you got to come in with cash. You have to show up with $1.5 million in cash. So people go, I want to be in cannabis. Great, I'll get you in it. You got $1.5 million? No, then you're not getting in cannabis. You're just not doing it. So when I talk about knowing your goals and then knowing where you stand in terms of, you know, in terms of resources, cannabis goes away in this case. That part goes away. Maybe we talk about home services. Maybe we talk about pet services. We talk about things that may not require, or that may not require a whole bunch of resources up front. Maybe are better from an SBA loan. We'll talk about lending here in a bit, but maybe SBA can support stuff. Maybe you can do an absentee. Maybe you can do things on your phone versus being there managing people. There's a number of different franchises with a number of different strategies if we understand what the thoughts and directions are. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. If anything, I had an episode with a career coach named Amy Lee Miller, and part of our conversation was not going to the tactics of figuring out the what to do before you take a look inward and say, who am I? What is it that's important to me? Broadly speaking, what do I hope to achieve in the future? So that you don't end up solving the wrong problem, because that doesn't lead anywhere. And it sounds like it's very much the same thing if you want to become part of a franchise.
You can't create the answer if you don't know the question. Absolutely.
100%.
We're on the same page. Actually, she and I are on the same page. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Out of curiosity, for those that are veterans, are there any trends?
Well, ironically, I think 7 out of 10, I think the franchise, 7 out of 10 franchises are owned by veterans. I think I'm right on that statistic. It's very, if not, I'm very close to that number. So it is something that veterans are becoming aware of. It's a big number, and I was surprised when I heard it. And I was truly surprised, and I think it really falls into it falls into maybe a character of veterans, and that is they understand what rules are. They understand what a program is, what direction should be, and they understand hierarchy. And even though you may disagree, you're taught over the years, you may disagree and you may voice your disagreement, but at the end of the day, you're going to get it done. And that plays very, very well in the franchise world. So the franchisor may listen to you, complain about something, or say you have a better solution. But after you get off the phone, this is the way we're doing it. And I think veterans play very, very well in that. I see a lot of veterans now trending towards home services, because you can operate out of your house. You can operate mostly on your phone. And actually, part of it is a study was done that most veterans learn best when there's a combination of hands-on and audio learning. And there's a statistic, and I forget it, but it's somebody that came out of the military and you're trying to train them. And they did a test that said, if you don't have, the test was if you didn't do hands-on training, the absorption rate was extremely low for military personnel. You throw in hands-on, it became extraordinarily high. It's a strange phenomenon, but I think when veterans are looking at business, they're looking at what do I know? What can I do? Where do I play? And I think that one, coming out of the military, you have a leadership discipline. So you go into creating a small franchise, a small group. It's a comfort that if I have a drywall company, as an example, you can learn how to drywall, and somebody doesn't show up, you can jump in. And military people never have an issue with rolling up their sleeves. Hmm. So I think that plays very well. That financially, home services tend to be less expensive than places that require brick and mortar somewhere. Even though it's a Subway, you still got to outfit a Subway and pay lease on it, et cetera. Home services, typically you're working out of your basement or a garage or something. You don't need a building. So I'm seeing people kind of land, specifically military people, kind of go towards the home services and growing organizations in that fashion. The second one would be smaller food places that may be a food truck or a Subway that's pretty small. That you create a nice little team. And almost exclusively every single person in the military, the first thing out of their mouth is, I want to create a company where I can create a good team. Almost 100% of the time. It's music to my ears, actually. But yeah.
Well, Steve, we're running a little bit low on time, but man, we covered a lot of ground, and really the ground that I thought was most important. So as we prepare to wrap up this recording, I'm going to ask you a question that I ask all of our guests. If there were two or three things that you want listeners to remember as they're preparing for their own transition, what are they?
Well, a couple of things. Number one is what you've learned in the military, don't take it for granted. You know, lean on that. Lean on that discipline. Lean on that self-confidence. Lean on that self-awareness hard. Because it will get you through pain, and you're going to transitioning. Any transition is painful. Lean on that, a big thing. I think the other part is take a moment and reflect on you. What's important to you? What's important really? What's important to you in terms of values? What your future looks like? Because no matter what anybody else thinks, what's important to you is important, period. And I'll just add something is even my employees, when I had Paul Davis, I would tell them, I'd love to keep you here as an employee, but if you're not happy, let's figure out what makes you happy. I'll help you. I'll help you go find another job. Because it's more important to know what makes you tick than anything. And then at the end of the day, don't ever be afraid to reach out, whether it's a consultant, whether it's a counselor, someone that has experience and knowledge in an area. And my old football coach used to say, no man is an island. So really, those things in my mind, if you get those really under control, the world starts to open up and options become fewer because they don't matter. The things that don't matter just fall away. That's my thought of the day.
Hey, those are gold. I appreciate that. I was writing them down as you were saying them. So how can listeners find you? I mean, let's say we've got somebody on the line now and they're like, yes, you know, but I still don't know what I want to do. How can they get in touch with you?
No, please. I mean, I'm on LinkedIn. So, you know, Steve Rote and on LinkedIn. I have a website. It's, FCC Mid-Atlantic, which is abbreviation for Franchise Consulting Company. Mid-Atlantic, that's my website. And there's all kinds of stuff on the website. Yeah, I think those are the two easiest ways to find me.
Well, we'll make sure we get all that in the episode notes. Steve, hey, thank you so much. That was fun.
Oh, I enjoyed it. I love this stuff. This is fantastic. I enjoy you. It's fantastic. And I enjoy what you're, I'm happy of what you're doing out there, because the truth of the matter is, there's a lot of nonsense out there in the internet and space and everything else. But Chris, what you're providing is a value, brother, and I actually mean it. So thank you for doing this stuff.
That's kind of you, Steve. I appreciate it. And that's about it. So I'll be in touch, Steve.
You got it. Thank you.
All right. Take care. And Steve Rote has left the virtual studio. It's just me. I'm Stag here. But that was a great conversation. Steve also wanted me to pass something that maybe wasn't necessarily covered. And I think this is an important one. So let's just say, for the sake of argument, you got that franchise bug bite. And this is something that you're interested in doing. One of the things that Steve does with his franchise consulting company's Veteran Council is provide financing help. So he has this program, and his company has this program called Bet on a Vet 100. That's Bet on a Vet 100, where they give away $1 million to 100 vets that want to start a franchise. So if you have military affiliation, you're thinking about going into franchising, it sounds like a no-brainer to spend your time talking to somebody that can help match you with maybe the franchise that should be most interested in, a franchise that aligns with your goals. And plus, if you're a service member that's transitioning, an extra $10K in the pocket to help pay for expenses, that could be very beneficial. So Bet on a Vet 100, it's a $1 million giveaway where they give away $10,000 to 100 active duty or service members or veterans that are trying to start a franchise, particularly as they're getting ready to transition. It's a great program. So that's it. I'm going to let what Steve said stand on its own. And I'm just going to tell you, if you're listening to this podcast, thank you very much. I appreciate your listenership. And if you can, give us a review on whatever app you're using. If it's Apple Podcasts, think about giving us a 5-star review. But to be honest, I'll take any feedback that you have, because I'm constantly trying to make the content here useful and improve. I just want to improve. So you could also follow our content. We're on Instagram at New Mission CT. That's New Mission Charlie Tango. And we do some releases there. Plus, you could DM us on that platform. You could hit me up on LinkedIn. I'll take your messages. Certainly take it that route, or via good old fashioned email at newmissionct@gmail.com. And I promise you, I'll get back to you as soon as I can. If you're preparing for your own transition, know that I'm right there with you. So until next time, stay focused.